It's been an historic year for North Carolina in so many ways. Hi, I'm Tracy Doakes, President and CEO of MCNC. Thank you for joining us today for a special edition of our MCNC Community Connect broadcast. For 14 years, MCNC has highlighted a dozen stories throughout December to create the 12 Days of Broadband. This beloved tradition is a nice way to end the year by recapping MCNC's top activities and accomplishments and featuring important news from our partners and other regional, state, and national broadband organizations. This month, we have showcased how high-speed internet and wise investments in broadband technologies drive positive economic and social growth in North Carolina. Our state's unprecedented, once-in-a-generation opportunities allow us to pursue innovation at the highest level. It's an exciting time in North Carolina and for MCNC. And today I'm joined by members of MCNC's senior leadership team to look back on our incredible year and forward to 2025. Thank you all for being here. For over four decades, MCNC has proactively met the technology needs of North Carolina citizens, been a consistent leader in innovation, and served as a catalyst for technology-based economic development. Today is our chance to do something right and something good in North Carolina. Today, we call for action to remedy the underlying digital inequalities that keep many from reaching their full potential. Tomorrow, we will continue building relationships and making smart investments in broadband to drive our economy to new heights. So if we recap over the last year, one of the things that we're doing right now is developing our new strategy for the next 5 years. So the previous plan was created using the lens of COVID. This time around, our lens is innovation. We want to ensure we are continuing to provide the best quality services, introduce more future forward services, strengthen our investments for our research community, and build stronger bonds with our vendor community, public sector, regional service providers, and others to meet the needs of our great state. One of our initiatives from the first plan included digital transformation and modernization of internal systems. Most know that these efforts also contribute to quality and efficiency of services. A new financial service, service management, GIS, and other platforms are no small feat and take a while to implement and perfect. We at MCNC are committed to continuing our digital transformation in this version of the strategic plan as well. One of our other really big accomplishments this year is the creation of Encore with Roanoke Cooperative. Encore aims to enhance the technology and economic environment for North Carolina's overlooked, unserved, and underserved areas. As a nonprofit partnership between MCNC and FIBE, which is a subsidiary of Roanoke Cooperative, along with its member organization, delivers vital broadband infrastructure and services, enabling businesses and individuals to take full advantage of the high-speed internet. Collaborating with North Carolina Electric Membership Cooperatives, or EMCs, Encore strives to tackle the state's most pressing infrastructure needs, allowing community anchor institutions, residents, and businesses to connect with greater opportunities and also engage in an expanding digital world. Speaking of broadband, this is the perfect segue to our Chief Operating Officer, Tommy Jacobson, to talk about what else is happening with connectivity and our other major projects. Tommy?
As most folks would know, 2 years ago at this point, we were awarded a $19.5 million project from the NTIA to expand broadband in North Carolina through two regions of the state where we had not necessarily ever provisioned a great amount of broadband that MCNC maintained. So during the bulk of the calendar year, we were working with our external engineering firm and the NTIA to achieve environmental clearance for starting construction. This involved consultations with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office, and also any tribal consults that were needed within the state to make sure that we were meeting all provisions of achieving NEPA compliance. In late August, we were able to get that approval, and we formally began construction in late September. In early September, we did have a nice kickoff event in Stanford to recognize the importance of the project with state and federal leaders. And as I say, in late September, we did formally get started with construction. At this moment in time, in early December, I'm happy to say that we're pretty much back on schedule where we had hoped to be as it relates to completion of the project, with nearly 40% of the conduit installed in the ground, and have started clearing efforts related to where the communication huts will be established in Sanford, excuse me, in Salisbury, Albemarle, and Stanley County, and then Kenansville, North Carolina, on the campus of James Sprunt Community College.
So, Tommy, can you expound a little bit on the difficulty of HERO versus the difficulty in BTOP and one and two?
Actually, I don't know that it's been more difficult. I think the past experiences that we had with the federal government and their expectations, we went into the project understanding what it was that we had to do to meet that compliance. In many ways, I think the NTIA has tried to streamline some efforts as it relates to achieving environmental clearance. But the challenge with that is that you still have to go through the exercise and doing those consults to make sure that in the case of like North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office, any of the work that you're doing does not harm would not harm a building or an area of consequential, importance. And then when you think about the tribal consults, what you're looking to do there is to make sure that you're not going to be working in an area that, would have an Indian burial ground, for example. Very little of our project was going anywhere near a tribal reservation, but those tribes were recognized across the entire state of North Carolina, so they still had to be consulted. But I would say that my experience, 10, 12 years ago when we were going through this, helped in, basically saying if it's a, if it's a historical area of Salisbury, for example, don't go anywhere near it, go two blocks removed. Or if it's near a cemetery, don't go on the same side of the road as a cemetery, go to the other side of the road as a cemetery. So it was those type of things that I think helped us, with our design, such that we had very little, what I would classify as reroutes, to consider as part of the engineering and the environmental process.
Got it. Thank you.
It's still, it's a fairly important project for us. Otherwise, we wouldn't have obviously went after the funding. As I mentioned, $19 million, $11.5 million of that is federal investment. A portion of that is also a commitment from our continued partnership with the Golden Leaf Foundation. And then the balance of it is internal, MCNC funding. When complete, it'll add roughly 209 miles of infrastructure to our network, and will pass through 11 of our counties in the state. So obviously, with the continued expansion of the network, that doesn't mean we don't have to continue operating the existing backbone that we have across the state of North Carolina. And throughout the year, we continue to do the normal, operating things and providing stellar, excellent service delivery, high customer satisfaction scores that I'm sure Jim will probably touch on a little bit later, and just continue to operate the network in an exemplary fashion. We did see some other expansion during the year, in placement of new huts in Sanford and Hamlet, in Dobson. Believe it or not, with all of the fiber cells and efforts we've had over the last 10 years, we ran out of space in those areas and needed to provision new facilities. And we finished that work during the year as well as a completion of around, I think it was 80 or 90 miles of construction between Winston-Salem and Dobson that had been on our plans for a number of years, kind of with the idea that we would tie it together with the HE-ROAD project, leaving Winston-Salem going toward Stanley County and Albemarle. So all of that work was, I'm glad to say, was completed during the year, and our team did a magnificent job of doing the day-to-day while continuing to do the expansion work that was fundamentally required of us by ourselves and others to make NCRN the premier, R&E network in the country, in my humble opinion. And then obviously, in late September, we had to deal with something that in my long tenure at MCNC, I never thought that I would have to deal with. And that was the impact of Hurricane Helene when it hit North Carolina on September 27th. It's a day I'll probably never forget for a number of reasons. That had a catastrophic effect to our network, things that I didn't think that would ever come into play in terms of testing our resiliency of our network did in fact come into play. Over the span of about 6.5 hours, we lost all three of our working paths into the western part of the state. Anybody that's familiar with the NCRN network knows that Asheville is a critical hub for us in terms of serving the western part of the state. And as I say, in about 6.5 hours, or starting around 6:30 in the morning of September 27th until around 12:30 that afternoon, we lost an underground route from Old Fort into Asheville. We due to results of flooding in the Swannanoa River area. That was the last event that was what, as everybody in the room here knows, is what triggered me calling a major incident and invoking our emergency management team in declaring a disaster.
Tell me, can you give us a sense, or the listeners a sense, of that destruction of equipment and fiber, what that meant to our clients?
Yeah, fortunately, we didn't suffer any equipment failures. We never had any flooding of facilities that necessarily, destroyed equipment. But we did, as a result of losing all three of those fiber paths, we had, 568 affected connectivity services from a standpoint of everything from IP services to managed fiber services, lit fiber services, where we operate fibers for other folks. Much of those outages, once we were able to repair our fiber infrastructure, we, as you might imagine, determined that those were the result of localized power issues and third-party carrier issues. But while our network was impacted for the better part of 48 hours until we could gain access into the disaster area and develop a plan to bring our fiber infrastructure back up, we were completely without visibility to the western part of the network for a good portion of that time.
Well, you and I and Jim spent a considerable amount of time on the phone, right, talking to representatives from the hospitals. Can you talk about that a little bit, about the timing that it took to get them back online, any temporary solutions that we had to put in place? Because, of course, it is life and death where they're concerned, and we fielded a lot of calls with them to try to figure out how to help. Can you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, so the first, as the storm cleared the area, at that point, you're trying to analyze what exactly you're faced with, and we started trying to gain access into the area. So all we really knew is that pretty much everything was impacted in some fashion. Even once the storm passed, so you're now dealing with the flooding and the debris and our roads open or closed. And the challenge that we faced in the first, I would say, nearly 48 hours was just gaining physical access to the Asheville metropolitan area. It was not until Sunday midday that we were able to identify a path into the western part of the state by way of South Carolina that came up, I-26 into the Hendersonville area. And so during that time, obviously, we had a couple of hospitals that had gone to their emergency response plans, because even though they had multiple sources of redundancy, much of that redundancy was taken out of play because of localized carrier problems, and in some cases our network being impaired with the two major fiber outages that we had into Asheville and Hendersonville along those two corridors. So it brought about the idea, well, how do you make places like a hospital even more resilient? And it's come to mind now that perhaps it's not a great solution for everyday operations, but going forward, do the low Earth orbit satellite systems like a Starlink, are they a viable candidate just to keep some amount of communications in place for critical locations like hospital and public safety? And I think the answer to that is going to be a universal yes. Whether or not those folks would get that service from MCNC, as a one-off third-party sales sort of environment, I think is still to be considered. It's something certainly Jim and I are talking to the healthcare system about. But the limitation of those systems in the normal everyday business offering is the limitation of the bandwidth. So it's great for a natural disaster like this, but long term, I don't think you would. Unless there's something on the horizon to increase the amount of capacity of those systems, I don't think it's something that you would use except for a natural disaster.
Any other lessons learned to share?
I think our team performed really well. An analogy that I've used that you've heard, one of my favorite movies is Apollo 13. And one of the approaches I took early on in this is like, what do we have on the spaceship that's actually works? How can we leverage what we have in ways that may not have been envisioned to be used. So I thought the team was very, obviously, they're always committed, but they really rose to the occasion and responded really well. So we've dissected this and looked at it. What could we have done better? What would have helped our jobs in the beginning? And one thing that I had never really considered was that, satellite phones for communication with our staff when they were trying to get into the region would have been incredibly helpful. And because all of the cell phone service was either down or greatly impaired. And in fact, some of the fiber restorations we did, once we got the fibers restored, it greatly improved the cellular communications in those areas. Satellite phones, I think going forward, we've actually last week placed the order to make sure we have those in place going forward. But I think, the human element of what our staff had to deal with, I don't want to take that for granted. Some of my folks, our folks, saw things that will be with them the rest of their life, and we need to think about that, right? Making sure we have mechanisms in place to support them. But again, I'm very proud of how our team as a whole performed, and as you know, Tracy, we even fixed things that were not necessarily our place to fix because
Yeah,
everybody
that's
was
true.
just banding together to, again, bring resource to the table to, if you had something that was working, how could it be leveraged by others to make their position a little bit better at that moment in time? And so we worked, well with other small regional carriers, like Conterra and ERC, to make that happen.
Yeah, this will be a continued conversation for sure. I talked about this lens of innovation. And so I'd like to ask Phil Eamer if he would talk a bit about some of the innovation initiatives we've had over the last year and what's on the horizon.
So innovation is a pretty big bucket. I think we've been innovating across markets, across services, also, of course, thinking about new and interesting kinds of technologies where it makes sense for MCNC to play. The work you mentioned with FIBE is an innovation for us, right? Kind of digging a little bit deeper, doing the best we can to figure out how to expand the number of citizens, right, that benefit from MCNC's infrastructure. And while that's more of a sort of business innovation, there are also things on the sort of far technical end, things related to artificial intelligence and quantum, for instance. So on the artificial intelligence front, we have had a couple of key things happen. Number one, our NC Share initiative, which is the NSF-funded shared compute and data infrastructure that was put in place a couple years ago. We applied with Duke, Duke as PI, us as a co-PI, for an expansion of that, which is a GPU as a service expansion of the shared compute and data infrastructure, which we found out recently was awarded.
Yes, kudos.
So kudos to the team and Duke and others who are involved in the larger NC Share community. And that, in a sense, gets us in the AI infrastructure game. So it's a relatively small initial investment, but it's, you know, 32 NVIDIA GPUs in a cluster sitting on MCNC's floor. That equipment actually is getting ordered this week, and likely will show up in January. And it's not in a bubble, right? So that infrastructure will be part of a federation of GPUs that'll get combined with Duke's infrastructure, with NC State's infrastructure, with UNC's infrastructure to provide a shared GPU environment. Because what the researchers have told us and the heads of research computing at the universities have told us is even the largest, most well-equipped universities don't have enough infrastructure to support all of the research needs at a single time. So for instance, training a new AI model may require a researcher at NC State to have access to all of NC State's GPU resources, plus all of Duke's, plus all of Carolina's, plus maybe the new infrastructure we have at MCNC for a time. And so the growth of the research opportunities built on top of AI is definitely an area that we're starting to participate in and that we see as a growth area, not just on the shared infrastructure, compute, and storage side, but it will also affect the network, right? As you know, we've seen on NC Ren through the 4 decades, what it is that generates the bits and what it is that the nature of that traffic looks like changes. Video always seems to be one of the big ones in one way or another. But the work on AI and AI infrastructure and training of AI models and AI research programs will in fact create a new sort of overlay of traffic that the NC Ren team and the data center team and the cybersecurity team will have to manage through.
Can I ask, so in our new plan that we're developing, we have a section there about developing more strategic partnerships. So what do you see as really good opportunities for us to begin additional strategic partnerships going forward?
That's a great question, Tracy. Well, starting with AI, I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And I'll say we should drive with partnerships, right? Because the technology is moving so fast. By the time we, you know, order equipment, get it racked and stacked and get it used, there's probably 2 generations of new technology that are there. So having partners, whether it's on the equipment provider side, it turns out that the equipment that we're buying for the GPU as a service grant that I just mentioned is going to be through Lenovo. And while it's leveraging NVIDIA GPUs, Lenovo's particular server infrastructure, the way they deal with cooling, liquid cooling and so forth is sort of the right answer. And so being able to partner with companies like Lenovo is helpful. When you look at the AI GPU infrastructure inference kind of world, it could make sense to look at companies like Grok or follows on to companies like Grok, which again, if you look at their 2-year kind of rise, they've had a lot of pivots already. So us being able to learn from their lessons and you know, sort of go further faster with them. And then quantum is the other area where it's a pretty clear future forward research opportunity. I'd say it's probably a decade further out in terms of having production kinds of services. But we are very lucky in North Carolina that we've got a lot of quantum computing, quantum infrastructure talent in the state, and in particular, here in RTP region, at NC State, at Duke. So for instance, the two co-founders of IonQ, which is the first publicly traded quantum computing company, are principals at Duke University at the Duke Quantum Center. So we have been working with them on several quantum grants, particularly focused, as those listeners might imagine, on quantum computing communications and quantum networking. So IonQ, as a quantum computing company, is a great partner for us, both sort of independently and through the Duke Quantum Center. We had been looking at another quantum company, Qubitekk, which IonQ bought recently. And it's interesting to look at that because it's taking a quantum path that we've been betting on a little bit. And so Qubitekk is more of a quantum communications company. And essentially what we're seeing in the quantum world right now is folks not thinking that there will be just a few huge quantum computers with thousands and thousands of qubits. What we're going to see is more smaller, let's call them mainframes, quantum mainframes, that then need to be connected into a distributed network. So we've seen this before.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's hard to hear mainframe again. As a previous mainframe coder, it brings back memories that are not altogether pleasant. So, but I guess what's old is new again is what I'm
It's
hearing.
very similar. We certainly MCNC has gone through lots of cycles here of centralized computing, distributed computing, now back to centralized computing, and it's they're quick turnarounds, right? So even AI was very central, and now the GPU as a service is about distributed version of AI. And then quantum again was let's build sort of large, very expensive high performance computing platforms. But the practical nature of how you do that, how quickly you can get there, sort of requires us to build sort of, I would call them mini mainframes or something,
Gotcha.
and then connect them via distributed networks. And again, recently we've started talking as well to Cisco and their quantum research universe, where they're looking for practical use cases for the work they're doing in the quantum communications area. So there's lots of opportunities there. And finally, also the cloud providers, right? So you've got whether it's AWS, GCP, Microsoft, Azure, all of them are in play. It makes a lot more sense for us to figure out ways to build sort of hybrid cloud environments that address whether it's AI computing, storage, quantum communications, simulation, cybersecurity advancements. Feel like we're better together when we partner with those folks. There's a lot of access that they get with us, and there's a lot of shortcuts maybe we get with them. So somewhere in the middle is the right answer, I think.
Mind-blowing to hear you talk about quantum and AI and the qubits and all of the things. Sometimes it's really hard to fathom and how you get from there to use cases, right, over time that people can understand and relate to. So yeah, talk about future focused. Jim, how about you? What's happening in the world of marketing and communications that you can share?
Yeah, there's a lot. Obviously, you've heard from Tommy and Phil thus far. We definitely have a really good story to tell. We've been telling that story to a growing number of groups and interests across the state of North Carolina. When you think about the HERO Project, which is making significant progress, we've had a lot of conversations with various communities. Tommy and I, not too long ago, met with the city of Salisbury, who wanted to learn more about the project and ultimately provided approval for our construction through their city. But we continue to have those conversations with other communities and community interest groups and various stakeholders about that project. So folks are excited for what that means, not just from a technology and a broadband infrastructure perspective, but also from a workforce and community and economic development standpoint. What does that mean for them? And we're proud to be a part of that conversation, looking forward to more of those conversations with those communities. You talked about Encore, Tracy, earlier. Encore is really long overdue. And it's, just like here, where there's donut holes across the state where service remained absent, Encore seeks to address that same issue in those overlooked, unserved, or underserved communities in rural North Carolina, partnering with Five to do so. We've had a lot of conversations with the EMCs, the electric membership cooperatives, as well as the telcos, their membership cooperatives as well. And, you know, we've faced no real opposition to this effort. When you think about it, at the end of the day, both the EMCs and the TMCs, along with MCNC and Five and Encore now, we're all on the same page. We're all dedicated to the same mission of bringing about that much needed broadband infrastructure to those communities. Along the way, as we've talked to those EMCs and those TMCs, whether it's Encore or Hero or a number of other projects across the state, we've been increasingly engaged with members of the North Carolina General Assembly. We've had a number of conversations with our congressional delegation as well, who have a very keen interest in preserving and North Carolina's status as the most connected state in the nation. You know, Tommy mentioned our groundbreaking for HERO. You know, we had the NTIA leadership here. We had White House representation here, as well as a number of other elected officials, community leaders, business leaders across the state who take a keen interest in that project. So MCNC has certainly had no shortage of visibility and no shortage of opportunity to tell our great story. And I think, you know, if you think about that too, our customers have told us that we're doing a great job and they appreciate the resources, the experience, and the support that we bring to them as well. And that's evidenced primarily by the customer satisfaction surveys that we do every year. For the second year in a row, we had a 100% customer satisfaction rate, which is unheard of. Customer satisfaction rates generally tend to be based upon the most recent experience that a customer has had with their provider. And that's great, it's 100%. But we've added the Net Promoter Score, which the Net Promoter Score tends to be more long-term and a reflection of their support for an organization. So a Net Promoter Score is simply how likely are you to recommend MCNC as a provider? Our Net Promoter Score is well above the industry average at a 91%. Yeah. So that speaks volumes to some of what you've heard from Phil and yourself, and particularly to what Tommy said earlier about how we meet and surpass the needs and expectations of our customers. And, you know, just a prime example of that was the response to Hurricane Helene, the ongoing updates and interactions and the great lengths that our team went to maintain and restore service throughout that ordeal. So a lot of good things happening, a lot of great opportunities, a lot of great stories we can tell to a growing audience, if you will.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't at all. You know, when we talk about all of the future forward services and brand recognition, so a lot of the work that that's been done over the last 4 years has been about allowing communities, not just the ones that we interact with, to know who MCNC is. So going forward, as we either expand services or build new ones, what do you think, how do you think the sales part or advocacy part of our organization has to change? Are there partnerships there that you see going forward? Because that's going to be a critical part of what we do.
Yeah, very much so. I think we're going to have to look beyond those that we currently engage with. We're going to have to look at new markets, new opportunities, new organizations to partner with, whether it's economic development groups, community groups, chambers of commerce, things of that sort. You know, I think there is to some extent this expectation that MCNC is going to be the provider of a lot of things, or MCNC is seen as the resource. And when people think about, well, who does that? I think we're getting to a point where a lot of folks assume that's MCNC, or they expect that MCMC will take a leadership role in some of these new advancements in technology, like Phil mentioned not too long ago, right? There's almost this expectation, and I think most everybody around this table will recall that a former member of Congress told us at a meeting he's looking to see what's next from MCMC. There's an expectation that we'll take on new things and exciting things. So as you have those conversations, good work begets good work. We've done a great
that
job.
That is true.
And we'll continue to do great things in partnership with our existing customers and new customers and new opportunities that we identify.
Great. Thanks, Jim. So let's talk a bit about glue. Without our very fairly new one of the group, adept CFO, Sarah Taylor. So Sarah, you know, I mentioned digital transformation, some of the modernization efforts. Do you want to talk a bit about finance and its impact on the rest of the organization and some of the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. So hearing what everybody else has talked about so far, what finance does is we're complementary. We're supporting what everybody else is doing, making sure that we have those agile processes to keep things moving, as well as making sure that there's the necessary controls in the organization so that we'll continue to be around for the long term and have the money to do all of these fun and exciting things. A few things that come to mind we've done over the last year. We created a new professional relationship with a new accounting firm. As a not-for-profit, we want to ensure that we are being good financial stewards of the resources that we have, that we're presenting those accurate financial statements so that the public, our constituents, can gauge, are we being those good financial stewards? So I'm proud to report that we received a clean opinion on our audited financials. At the same time, we also underwent an audit specifically on the HERO program that also got a clean opinion. So that was a lot of effort starting up a new relationship, but ultimately worth it. One of the other things that we've really been looking at is all of our procurement workflows. So everything that everybody around the table has talked about thus far involves, a fair amount of purchasing of money coming in, money going out, and looking at how do we create processes that are efficient, but while still ensuring that we're getting we're getting exposed to innovative solutions, that we're getting competitive pricing, without our leaders having to spend a ton of time sourcing different vendors. So really proud of the work that we've done there. Next steps would be continuing down that path, building out NetSuite to make sure that it complements those workflows. And then also just building out a long-term financial plan that complements the strategy that everybody has talked about thus far, creating processes that enable us to evaluate future opportunities that we don't even know about today. But, what is the method by which we evaluate those, as well as do look backs on those to determine how effective or how successful were we?
Yeah.
Lots of good work ahead.
Most definitely. And I think that's why we benefit from having a strategic CFO. It's not just about what we do today, but what can we do tomorrow? And how do we find the solutions in order to do that? So thank you for your work. So as we shift gears to workforce and human resources, human capital, which make all of these things work, I'd like to ask you, Matthew, what's been happening over the last year as it relates to your world?
It's been a great year. It's been busy, but it's, as you all know, but I was putting together a few sort of highlights to talk about with this group. And there's some that obviously bubble to the top. And then there's some that, I feel like we are sort of lucky to be able to point at year over year as things that continue, right? It is just to give a little perspective going back, we, as of today, we have 141 employees on staff. Looking back at the numbers in 2020, a mere 4 years ago, we had 96 employees. So we have been creeping incrementally up that every year, which is great. I mean, these are all wonderful signs of us as a place that people want to be, us as a growing and developing our offerings and our services out to our customers. And ultimately, I think it's a, you know, it points back at us as it really shows how supportive we are sort of for our team and, you know, people want to be here. We got a great nod this year. We, for the second time, we were named one of the Triangle Business Journal Great Places to Work in North Carolina and the Triangle area, which is awesome.
Yes, it is.
I always love that as something to hang our hat on and as good sort of external view for folks about what we do here and how much our people are sort of tied to our mission and each other. But even on the other side of that, on the internal side, right? So we have our annual employee engagement internal survey that we run, which I've often told staff that as much as I appreciate the accolades from the TBJ, those are this survey is the one we look at a little bit more closely every year to make sure that we're sort of keeping a pulse on what our people want and what our people are feeling. I mean, we always get good feedback from that. We always get some things we can work on, but we still continuously, even with this growth in people over the years, get really high marks on our strategy execution and our flexibility work environment, our mission focus organization, the team cohesion. Those are the things that always rise to the top, this internal feedback that makes it really, really compelling. And we also, as you all know, we continue to rate ourselves every year against other tech companies and things along those lines. And we continue to exceed those benchmarks. And all this is great. All this is wonderful to sort of say every year we feel good about it. And every year as we grow a little bit more, I sort of think the same thing. I'm like, not only are we able to continue to point at these things that we do really well, but even as we get bigger, we're bringing people into the fold that also feel that way. Hopefully, people that have been here a long time continue to feel that way. So those are great. Those are nice accolades for the year. You know, we've continued to sort of add some operational improvements on the HR side, a lot of stuff behind the scenes that nobody sees. One of the things that we rolled out late last year, so technically it probably was a last year thing, but we really started working really heavily with our new applicant tracking tool this year, started using it for a lot more internal functionality for folks. So as we were hiring the 21 new people that we onboarded this year, where those were backfills and other obviously complete new hires, we were able to sort of really use that process really well on our back end here. Keeping, you know, we enhanced a lot of our benefits offerings over the year again. So we added, some of y'all remember, we added a new paid family leave option here for folks that are sort of adding people to their family, which has already been really well utilized in really high regard. Added some new ancillary benefits programs, you know, some people could take advantage of, including upgrading our pet insurance and some things like that along those lines. But, and I would say even in a year where, you know, we've gone through a process where we've had to make some changes to our medical plan just to sort of stay balanced in that regard, I think we've also worked to make sure that we are adding things like an increased health savings account contribution, things like that to sort of, we want to make sure people understand sort of where we are. We're part of dealing with a lot of things that are going on in the greater world when it comes to inflation and other things, but we also want to make sure we're making this, continuing to make this a good place to be. Employee engagement stuff, you know, we sort of can keep doing things, whether it's the Durham Bulls baseball games a few months ago or the cookie competition that Jim and Sarah were so great to sponsor a few weeks ago. You know, these are things that keep people, you know, engaged and enjoying themselves. But overall, as I was kind of looking at what we've been doing, my mind kept going back to the strategic plan process, right, Tracy, that you mentioned that we're working on. I mean, I think as we work through the coming months to build out that development opportunities, the growth, the sort of way we can might be able to focus in different ways on the talented people that we already have internally, the people that we're going to need to bring in to help us build out some of these programs and services and offerings. I think there's some really great opportunity to look at those, look at some change initiatives, look at things around that that just, again, sort of naturally flow from sort of the growth and the building out of these services that we've been doing. So, and I'll just reiterate one of the things Tommy said very early on. The team members here, they keep rising to the occasion on different things. I mean, there's obviously big events like the hurricane that Tommy mentioned earlier this year, where a lot of our people really dug in and went above and beyond sort of helping out. But I don't think any, especially in that regard, none of them ever questioned, this is something we're going to do. We're going to dive in. We're going to help our people in our state do this. But even on a day-to-day basis, you know, people step up. People step up and help out. And I feel like that's a really good sense of teamwork that, again, hopefully continues to pervade over the years to come.
Yeah. And I think that will be the case, right? So as we talk about the new strategy and the development of that, the work that you do and Sarah does and Jim does and Sean does is going to be incredibly important. And so, as we expand services and add new people to the fold, it affects those foundational areas as well, which will cause, kind of a ripple effect of expansion in those groups, as well as, more digital transformation to become as efficient as we possibly can be, which Sarah is doing a considerable amount of work in that realm. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about legal and legislative updates with Sean.
Sure. Yeah. So several other folks have already talked about some of the successes we've had this year, some of the big things in terms of fiber builds and things along those lines. Like accounting, legal doesn't necessarily run to the head of the crowd leading some of these, but what we do is I think there's kind of a at least two different roles. One is creating something that people can count on that's clear that they know what the process is going to be. This year, we completed a new 5-year agreement with the University of North Carolina System Office, and also a 10-year agreement with the North Carolina Telehealth Network. And we're adding some more services to that as well. With both of those are master agreements. So we have one agreement in place that then other schools or other healthcare providers can sign up without having to go through negotiate brand new terms. So it's where we work very closely with the customer to see what is it that's important to them, what are their needs, and we try to make sure that we can meet their needs while also protecting the interest of MCNC and providing a streamlined, efficient way for everybody involved to get the things that they're looking forward to. So that's one thing is about the expectations. Another role that legal ends up playing is what happens when stuff comes up that nobody was expecting. And how do we navigate that? So Hurricane Helene is an example of that, that usually when you're laying fiber and doing, the various things that we have to do, there's permitting processes and all these things that that folks usually have to go through, and a lot of that got thrown out the window as we figure out how do we work with our partners and the other vendors to get the systems back up and running. And often, when we're working on any kind of legal matter where stuff comes up that's not expected, it's like walking in fog that you go as far as you can see, and then you can see a little bit further. And so helping work with our folks so that we can navigate those unexpected things as well. And then another piece of it is that legal did this year is in working with our board. We're super fortunate that we've got a volunteer board made up of, a lot of our customers. We've got a few other people on the board as well that aren't customers, but that they're dedicating their time to the success of the state, the success of their organizations, how MCNC can contribute to that. And so one thing we've really dug into the last couple of years is looking at all the processes that we have with the board, the way that they handle their governance, the way that they address particular issues. And we've been actively, working with the board members to revise some of those processes, update them, again, to create both that sense of clarity around expectations and be able to assist with the deliberative process as they're weighing different things like Encore,
Right.
making sure that it's something that is a right fit for the organization. And the board asked lots of hard questions and had a very deliberative, thoughtful process as they ultimately went through and endorsed our involvement with Encore. And so it's been a great year. There's a lot going on, lots of exciting things, and I think lots more to come with the strategic plan and some other things in the works.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd say, with all of the board transformation that's also been happening, it has required a lot of time from you and your staff to ensure that we're, doing the right things, adjusting things where they need to be adjusted, and just continuing to make the board as efficient as possible, because to your point, they are a non-paid board, and some are from our vendor community and many are our clients. So we want to use their time as wisely as we possibly can. So Chris, some of our newest services sit in your part of the organization, and also with Tommy's as well, around cybersecurity. So I hate to ask this question, but what's going on and what's new? It's always a scary question to ask a cybersecurity professional.
Well, you didn't ask me the one question I wanted to avoid, which is, are we secure?
Ah, I
Because,
missed that memo.
yeah, I will have to answer that question the way you don't
Oh, no.
want.
It depends,
Yes.
my least favorite two words.
Yes.
I like this story.
I know
Yes.
you
Sean over
do.
in legal and me over here in security like to answer all the questions with it depends. In the cybersecurity services space this year, there's been a lot of work going on. A lot of that has been around maturity, taking processes and procedures in existing services that we're providing and understanding as the organization grows and as the cyber threat landscape continues to evolve and change, making sure that the processes and procedures that we have in place are appropriate, and in many cases it's about how do we get better, right, on a just on a continuous basis. So that's been a big focus within the team in the cybersecurity services space this year. I want to call out a few things: the firewall, managed firewall service that we provide for the K-12 community. In the previous year, the service was all about how do we onboard 220 customers onto this new service in a very small amount of time. And the team did what I think is exceptional work in expediting that, getting off of the previous platform onto the new platform, and doing that in a really timely and efficient way. This year has been all about, okay, now that we've done that, and in order to do that, largely what we did was take what was there and move it onto the new platform. So this year has been about going back and examining what is there to find how to optimize that, how to improve the security posture of those existing policies that have, in many cases, been there for a really long time and maybe haven't been looked at in a while. So that has been a focus in that managed firewall service this year, and we have identified across those over 100 folks that have completed this process at this point, lots of things that are security wins that we have been able to implement to help and improve the security posture of the community there. In addition to that, we've also launched a new service this year, our Attack Surface Monitoring service, which is an evolution of a vulnerability scanning service that we had offered previously. That has been a pretty significant amount of work to migrate folks in the K-12 community and the community college community to this new service. And we have seen what I would say is pretty significant security benefits from that. We have a number of vulnerabilities, potential things that someone needs to look at and address that we've been able to identify and be able to alert on those very quickly to folks in the community so that the problem can get fixed prior to a threat actor being able to take advantage of it. So we're pretty excited about that service, and we're also expanding that out to a brand new section of the community. And so now the team is very busy onboarding a very large set of infrastructure onto this service to help that part of the community get an improved security posture as well. And then continuing to expand what we're doing around the managed endpoint service. We've had a pretty significant expansion in the number of clients and number of endpoints that we're
providing protection for there. I think we're now up close to 300,000 endpoint devices across the state that our service is providing protection for. And we have seen, as the threat landscape continues to evolve there, some new and unique attack vectors. I am aware of at least one customer in this year that had a very significant, what could have been a very significant security event going on inside of their network. We were able to identify through our managed endpoint service, identify that activity occurring and prevent the threat actor from doing what they wanted to do. If that had not been the case, that would have been a serious compromise for that customer. So I'm, you know, very proud of the team and how it responded in that scenario, because that was certainly a big win.
So when you mentioned the 300,000 endpoints and all of these numbers that signal growth, right? So you've got maturity of what we're doing, and then there's growth. And as Matthew mentioned, you know, there's a percentage of the growth in numbers for resources that are directly from your area. So as we've been talking about, you know, more services in our strategic plan, do you have an idea the landscape of what else we're going to need going forward? I mean, I know you don't have a crystal ball, and I will dismiss you from the room if you say it depends, but I'm sure you've got a better answer. At least I pray you do. What's your thought about 2025 in cyber?
Yeah, absolutely. So our objective with Vital Cyber, which is the name of that cybersecurity business, is to provide world-class cybersecurity protections that are affordable and accessible to the community that we serve. So it's really all about, it's not about a specific service or a specific set of services. It's about how do we keep this community protected and stay on that edge of what's coming next. And so one trend that we're keeping our eye on is we've done a good job here with the services that we're providing at increasing the collective security posture of the community. But as those avenues get closed off as low-hanging fruit to the threat actors, they don't just stop and right. say, oh, well, right. okay, I'll, you know, shucks, I, they got me this time. What they do is move on to what is now whatever the next piece of low-hanging fruit is. So as we've gotten collectively as a community better in these specific areas that we've targeted, we're now seeing the repeated attack attempts shift into areas that aren't as strong. And yeah. so we have our eye on what are those areas and how do we now increase the security posture in those specific areas. And this is stuff like identity and credential theft and reuse. You know, these are areas that, you know, social engineering attacks, yeah. you know, phishing attacks, these are very prevalent. And we're starting to see where attackers are no longer having success with just basic ransomware attacks in the community. So now they're moving to, well, how can I steal a credential and leverage that to get me access into the environment, and then what can I do with that? So those are areas that we're very much looking at from a service standpoint as we move forward. Also, network monitoring and response. And then for us here at MCNC, an evolution towards more holistic security monitoring. So not just we are providing monitoring and response for endpoint and firewall, but more broadly across the infrastructure and the environments of the community that we're serving. How can we leverage what we're doing to provide advantages to our community there? So those are things that we're looking at.
And just quickly, same kind of the same question I asked Phil. We've got deep relationships with Zscaler and CrowdStrike and Palo Alto. And do you see any others on the horizon?
Yes, I hesitate to mention any specific names.
Of course you do. Okay.
But yes, there are absolutely new players, new interesting technologies. But I will say that those players that you rattled off that we do have partnerships with, they're also developing really compelling solutions
Yes.
that are addressing some of these needs. So it's not just about, who else, could we bring into the fold? It's also about how do we go deeper and get stronger with the folks that we already have great relationships as well.
Got it. Got it. So the team knows that, over the last year, when we have had some growing pains, my statement has always been, we need new pants. We've outgrown our old pants and we need new pants. And part of the creation for the enterprise IT team was centered around needing new pants. So can you briefly speak to what's been happening in that part of the world? Because we've just never talked about that publicly.
Yeah, sure. So about a year ago, we established a new enterprise IT organization inside of MCNC. It's not that we didn't have IT functions prior to that. We absolutely did. And those folks did fantastic work.
They did. They
It's
did.
really more of a reflection of the organization is evolving and changing and growing. And kind of to your point, how do we position ourselves for success with all of these new things that we're talking about wanting to do? And so, really, over the last year, we've been focused on taking stock of what we have. What's our inventory of all the IT systems and services and applications and capabilities, kind of building out a portfolio of what we currently have. And then looking at how do we go on a journey to transition from a team that's focused on, has been in the past focused on managing systems and servers and applications to a team that is focused on delivering services, making that shift. And so in doing that, we've been developing a framework that we want to use for service management, IT service management. We've been building out that service portfolio. We've been within that framework looking at what are the different roles that we need to play, who's going to be assigned to play those roles, and what resources do we have on the team, and how do we align those into this new service delivery model. So we've talked about growth here. We are adding new folks to the enterprise IT team. We're adding a whole new part of the team that is focused on service management and service delivery, and the processes and procedures, developing those and then bringing those back to the other parts of the enterprise IT team. So that's all stuff that's been going on over the last year within IT. I will also call out that Sarah mentioned that within the finance and accounting world, the audit activity that's happened there, MCNC on the service delivery and technology side maintains the SOC 2 Type 2. We get audited against that standard on an annual basis. This past year was there was some additional excitement around that for us because we transitioned to a new audit firm. We had been using the same firm for several years, and made a transition to a new audit firm. And for folks that live in that world, sometimes that creates excitement around, well, we've been doing it at this firm for several years, and we have a very good expectation of how this works and what they want to see from us. And then a new firm comes in and it doesn't work exactly the same. They want to see some different things or see things in a different way. And so that was, within our audit last year, making that transition that added a little bit of additional excitement. But I am happy to report that we did receive a very favorable report out of that audit. And that includes not just what we're doing around IT systems, it's also process and procedure. And so that was favorable. We are preparing to start that process again here shortly for the new audit period, and all of these changes that we're making around the IT service management, service delivery will hopefully provide benefits to make that whole audit attestation easier going.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you for joining us on MCNC Community Connect. And thanks again to the leadership team here today, as well as the MCNC team. You should be very proud of the outstanding accomplishments we've had over the past year. And as we continue our 44th year of service, we will continue to drive the evolution of the technology in our state. Thanks for your ongoing support and all that you do every day here at MCNC. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation and this year's 12 days of broadband. We'd love to hear your feedback on what we might do with this next year. You know, these comments are more around the inner workings of MCNC, what we do and the accomplishments that that we can share with you. But this is also about our community and why we do what we do as it relates to our mission. So from all of us at MCNC, we wish you and yours a wonderful holiday season, and we look forward to connecting with you again in 2025. Happy holidays from MCNC.